Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
This is an impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
You gave them the old razzle-dazzle. You razzle-dazzled them. You gave them an act with lots of flash in it. Made them believe you were compassionate. Gave them the old...
Greetings. This is podcast number 7 of Blast the Right. I'm Jack Clark from therationalradical.com, www.therationalradical.com. If you like that music we let in with, I'm going to play a little bit more of it at the end of the podcast and tell you then where you can find it on the web. Today we're going to discuss a critical element of any social justice agenda, raising the federal minimum wage to a living wage. A good solid discussion about raising the minimum wage to a living wage is particularly timely and appropriate now. There's two reasons for this. First, in the aftermath of Katrina, all of a sudden, America has rediscovered there's a lot of poor people. There's a lot of poor people there. There's, of course, been very little discussion about why they're poor or how you could end a lot of the poverty in the country. But we'll have that discussion right here. A second reason why I want to discuss the idea of a living wage now is because I get emails from people saying, all you do is complain. Why don't you have any solutions? Well, I do offer plenty of solutions on the website. The podcast is very young and it's short, so we don't get a chance in each podcast to complain about the right wing, criticize the right wing, see how the right wing has gone wrong, and offer the solutions for the problems. This podcast will be talking about a solution. From what I've been able to find out, the vast majority of the poor people in New Orleans aren't on welfare. No, the vast majority are working full-time. They're what's called the working poor, people who work full-time jobs but don't earn enough to rise above the federal poverty level. In the United States, there's 7 million workers who are the working poor. 7 million Americans work at jobs full-time, yet they do not earn enough to rise above the poverty level. Just about the single most important step we can take to reduce significantly the poverty in the United States would be to have a federal statute that raises the minimum wage from what it is now to a living wage. Of course, right-wingers are opposed to a living wage. In fact, they're opposed, some of them, to a minimum wage at all. They're opposed to anything that helps anyone but the rich. We know that. So I'll be pointing out as we go along, and especially towards the end, what objections the right-wingers raise to the concept of a living wage, and I'll explain how to counter their, what are sometimes imbecilic, and if not imbecilic, greed-based assertions. So first, what exactly is a living wage? I'll read you a very simple definition, which is that a living wage is that wage which will suffice for establishing and properly maintaining a family and for providing security for its future. Now, who wrote that? I'll get into that a little later. You may be surprised. Certainly the right-wingers would. It's important to note that we're talking about a hike in the minimum wage that employers have to pay. It is not, as some people get mixed up, it is not a government program that spends money. How high would this living wage hourly rate be? Right now, the federal minimum wage is $5.15 an hour. Let's go back to 1968, when we were really serious about conducting a war on poverty. The 1968 federal minimum wage was $1.60. If that $1.60 had been adjusted for inflation since 1968, the 2005 federal minimum wage would be $8.95. So as you can see, a federal minimum wage of $5.15 is woefully short of $8.95, and something like 40% of the purchasing power of the minimum wage has been eroded. Why did that happen? You guessed it, right-wingers! During the entire 8 years of that great humanitarian Ronald Reagan's administration, the federal minimum wage wasn't raised once. Under Bill Clinton, it was raised once, but then the Republican Congress came in, and that's all she wrote for any more increases in the federal minimum wage. During Bush's first 4 years, of course, it wasn't raised at all either. In fact, it hasn't been raised since 1997. Imagine any other group of workers who haven't had a raise since 1997, how bad off they would be, especially when they were right on the borderline of poverty already. Now, this $8.95 figure is quite appropriate. The federal government estimates that a family of three, the poverty level is $18,000 a year. The federal government always underestimates how much you need, but let's use that as a valid figure for now. $18,000 a year translates to $8.65 an hour. So if you had a federal minimum wage at $8.95, that would put the people a bit above the poverty line, which is what the minimum wage is supposed to do. Of course, local and state governments may well have their own higher minimum wages, which is the case now in various locations across the country, but at least the federal minimum wage sets a floor below which no one else can go. Now, you may be wondering, would this idea work? Does it help? What happens? Well, you may not know it from any even intense perusal of the mass media, but a living wage ordinance or statute has been passed in dozens, scores of jurisdictions around the country, and it's worked out very well, as far as I know, in all of them. So it is an idea that does work. You also may be wondering, well, it's a good idea, it's a just idea, it's a moral idea. Would people support it? Absolutely! Don't listen to what the right-wingers say. Polls regularly say that 75% of the people support raising the minimum wage. In fact, one poll a couple of years ago found that 94% of the people agree with the statement that people who work full-time should be able to earn enough to keep their families out of poverty. 94% of the people agree that people who work full-time should be able to earn enough to keep their families out of poverty. So the public is behind this kind of an idea. Even in the red states, voters think that the minimum wage is too low. When Florida voted for Bush in 2004, at the same time, the voters approved by 71% an increase in that state's minimum wage. So what do we know so far? We see that raising the minimum wage to a living wage would remove millions of people from the poverty rolls and allow them to live with some sort of dignity and hope. We see that it's been adopted in dozens, if not scores, of jurisdictions across the country successfully. And we see that the public is behind the idea of raising the minimum wage. And if we're to believe one poll, they're behind raising the minimum wage to a living wage. So, what are the right-winger arguments against doing this? What are their arguments against it? As you might expect, one of the arguments that they trot out against raising the minimum wage to a living wage is something that they use for every time somebody wants to help anyone who's suffering. It's the blame the victim argument. How does that work here? Well, what they say is, and I've heard them say this, they just say it with a straight face. They say, these people had choices in life. They didn't choose to get an education and better themselves, so they have only themselves to blame that they are in low-paying jobs. It's a result of their own free choices in life that they can't now feed their kids. Huh? What? How illogical is that? If these people in question had gone to school and gotten higher paying jobs, then someone else would be in the sub-living wage job. someone has to do those jobs. They're some of the jobs that are the most important. They're cleaning up our office buildings. They're taking care of our grandparents in nursing homes. Those jobs are going to be done no matter what happens to the people who are in them now if they get to go and get a better job. The issue is, should anyone work a full 40-hour week and not be able to feed their children? Beyond that, why do right-wing, you know, greedmongers assume that everyone could have pursued more schooling and landed higher paying jobs? You know, some people don't have the intellectual ability to do so. Others may have been frustrated by life circumstances beyond their control. And even if, for the sake of argument, they simply chose not to, does that by any stretch of logic, let alone application of a minimal level of compassion, lead to the conclusion that it's appropriate for them to be paid less than a subsistence level wage? And of course, let's remember that we're talking about this issue in the context of the richest nation the world has ever known. So I hope it's clear that this blame the victim, punish the victim approach of the right wing is not only immoral, but it's illogical. Do right-wingers have other objections to the minimum wage being raised to a living wage? Oh yeah, you betcha they do. One of them is that if we raise the minimum wage to a living wage, prices of things will go up too high. I actually had one guy write to me that if we raise the minimum wage to a living wage, the price of a loaf of bread will double, and then how will that be for everyone? How ignorant is that, as if the wages are 100% of the cost of a product? This supposed price rise that's so terrible has not happened in the places where they've adopted a living wage. And indeed, for an example, a study showed that if you raise the wages of the people who pick lettuce in California for our dinner tables, if you raise their wages to a living wage, the price of a head of lettuce would go up 2 cents. 2 cents! That price rise would, of course, be meaningless to anyone at virtually any income level. And who wouldn't pay 2 cents so that the people who pick the lettuce for you can feed their own children? This price rise argument is the same kind of argument you can use against abolishing slavery. Well, if we get rid of the free labor with slaves, everything's going to cost too much. The price established by a person who works for less than a living wage is an immoral price. It's an invalid price, and you can't use that as a benchmark against which to measure whether other wage levels should be established. You might also hear from a right-winger the argument that if the living wage is established, that there'll be fewer jobs. Employers won't be able to hire so many people. Again, that is just not so. That's not how things have worked out. Just another smokescreen that the right wing is throwing out to try and prevent such a social justice measure from being established. Now, if the right wingers' economic arguments don't make any traction, then they're going to fall back on one of their all-purpose arguments, which they use in all kinds of circumstances. And they're going to say, "Oh, this is socialism. What are you, a communist?" If they say anything like that, to that one can only reply, stop showing your ignorance. Socialism is when the government owns the means of production. That's nothing about what we're talking about here. Even further afield would be to characterize this as communism, where, among other things, there's no private property. If the right winger starts using the communism-socialism line of attack, they're name-calling. They're engaging in reprehensible red-baiting. Tell him or her, as the case may be, that if they're going to call you a name, at least make it an accurate one. And you know what? All their arguments, in however sophisticated terminology they're expressed, are really just smokescreens. They're fig leaves. This is what noted economist John Kenneth Galbraith said. I just love it. It's one of my favorite quotes. The modern conservative is engaged in one of man's oldest exercises in moral philosophy. That is, the search for a superior moral justification for selfishness. That's all their arguments amount to, fig leaves to camouflage their selfishness. So whenever a right-winger starts, you know, making my eyes glaze over with their allegedly sophisticated economic analysis, I just tell them that they're wrong, it makes no sense, and it's just a fig leaf to disguise something that'll make them richer. It's just a fig leaf for their selfishness. In that regard, I'd also like to add the Jack Locke corollary to the John Kenneth Galbraith quotation. And it is, everything done by the Bushians is designed to accomplish one of two things. One, transfer wealth from everyone else to the rich, or two, distract everyone else from the fact that, one, that transfer of wealth is occurring. That's all the right wing is about, and that's what's behind all their arguments. In fact, if you really want to turn it around and stick it in their face, give them this argument from Barbara Ehrenreich, as she put it in her book Nickel and Dimed, which, if you don't know, she went undercover, so to speak, as a member of the working poor for a period of time and documented how she couldn't, even as a single person, make ends meet. This is what she wrote. When someone works for less than she can live on, when, for example, she goes hungry so that you can eat more cheaply and conveniently, then she has made a great sacrifice for you. She has made you a gift of some part of her abilities, her health, and her life. The working poor, as they are approvingly termed, are in fact the major philanthropists of our society. They neglect their own children so that the children of others will be cared for. They live in substandard housing so that other homes will be shiny and perfect. They endure privation so that inflation will be low and stock prices high. To be a member of the working poor is to be an anonymous donor, a nameless benefactor to everyone else. To show how absolutely off the wall these right-wingers are, consider also three other sources of support for a living wage. The first source, which I'll name afterwards, wrote the following. It is but equity that they who feed, clothe, and lodge the whole body of the people should have such a share of the produce of their own labor as to be themselves tolerably well-fed, clothed, and lodged. Who wrote that? None other than the granddaddy of all conservative economics, Adam Smith, back in the 1700s. You may have had to have read in college Adam Smith's book, The Wealth of Nations. Way back in the 1700s, when conservative economics was just starting, they understood that you have to pay a living wage to everybody. Now let's flash forward a few centuries to the early 1900s. Here's Teddy Roosevelt, that Republican president, endorsing the concept of a living wage.
We stand for a living wage. Wages are subnormal if they fail to provide a living for those who devote their time and energy to industrial occupation. The monetary equivalent of a living wage varies according to local conditions, but must include enough to secure the elements of a normal standard of living. A standard high enough to make morality possible, to provide for education and recreation, to care for immature members of the family, to maintain the family during periods of sickness, and to permit a reasonable saving for old age.
That clip, recorded in the earliest days of sound recordings, may have been a little bit hard to make out, but I think it's pretty clear what position he was advocating, even if you couldn't make out every word. Now, remember earlier in the podcast when I read a definition of what a living wage was? Wages which will suffice for establishing and properly maintaining a family and for providing security for its future? You know who wrote that? That was the late Pope John Paul II. Pope John Paul II was one of the staunchest anti-communist figures of the 20th century. He was not only anti-communist, he was anti-socialist and anti-paternalistic state. Yet he strongly supported the concept of a living wage. That is the official teaching of the Roman Catholic Church. This is a long-established teaching of the Roman Catholic Church. 75 years ago, another pope wrote, "The worker must be paid a wage sufficient to support him and his family. If this cannot always be done under existing circumstances, social justice demands that changes be introduced as soon as possible, whereby such a wage will be assured to every adult working man." And I guess we would add working women. It goes back even further. 114 years ago, the Pope at the time, speaking of the right to a just wage, said, "Every individual has a natural right to procure what is required to live, and the poor can procure that in no other way than what they can earn through their work. If through necessity or fear of a worse evil, the workman accepts harder conditions because an employer or contractor will afford no better, he is made the victim of force and injustice." Force and injustice. In other words, it's violence. It's economic violence to pay someone less than a living wage. Only someone truly desperate would take a job that pays less than a living wage, less than they need to live on. Taking advantage of such desperate people through economic violence is immoral. I spent some time reading these religious writings because so many of these right-wingers claim to be religious, claim to be such devout and observant Christians. The Catholic Church doesn't have such great positions on anything having to do with sex or with women, but on economic matters, the official social teachings of the Catholic Church are quite progressive. I think these words of the various popes, as expressed in the official doctrine of the Roman Catholic Church, should be of especial interest to such noted Catholic right-wingers as Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly. You know, when you really think about it in a logical fashion, what these right-wingers are arguing is patently absurd. They're saying if there's people working now full-time but are still in poverty, the way to help them is to have them have even less money, to eliminate the minimum wage so there'll be people who work even cheaper. How does that make any sense? It's like if someone was slowly dying of malnutrition, and the solution you advocated would be not to give them more food, but to cut the amount of food that they get. That'll help them, all right? The right-wing position is just illogical, and it's immoral, but it's, shall we say, greed-compliant, in line with everything the right-wing advocates, which is to cause increased suffering and death to others. They try and create a false choice between poverty wages and communism. No, as we've discussed, there's a moral position, a living wage, minimum wage. But what do right-wingers know about morality? The bottom line is, are they saying that the richest country the world has ever known can't afford to pay everyone who works full-time enough money to live on, to support themselves? Are they saying that our economic system requires that there be a permanent underclass, working full-time but still living in dire poverty? Why not find your friendly local right-winger and ask them this, and tell me what they say? If they don't like the idea of a living wage, then what's their solution? Now, I'd suggest that to solidify all this in your mind, if you have the time, you might want to listen again to this podcast. Then you'll be able to wipe the floor with any right-winger on this issue. In fact, you can use the right-winger's head as a mop to wipe the muck off the floor of New Orleans once the floodwaters are finally pumped out. Okay, this podcast has gone on longer than I thought it would, so I'm going to wrap it up now. I want to thank Tom Hartman for the Teddy Roosevelt clip. TomHartman.com. He's a brilliant talk show host, now on Air America, as well as his own independent syndication. After I sign off, I'm going to let you hear a little bit more of the song that I opened the podcast with. The words and performance of that song are by Bill Jacobs, BillJacobs.us. You can go there for some other music. As always, if you liked what you heard, please turn on your friends to this podcast. If they don't know about podcasting, turn them on to the whole podcasting thing as well. So until next time, I'll sign off and say I love you all, including all you right-wing pieces of crap.
Believe you were compassionate, gave them the old hocus pocus. You misdirected them with 9/11 and Saddam Hussein. You played them both right to perfection, despite the fact there's no connection. You razzle-dazzled them, let those blue states complain.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
You gave them the